The Princess Bride. Hey everybody, welcome back to Check the Gate, a Film Lover's Deep Dive. Good God. We are in Chapter 2 of Season 2. Brandon had a brilliant idea. He said, what's a good way to chase down Mad Max? With a couple of rom-coms. So we got three dudes talking rom-coms.
Love it.
Why was rom-coms sticking out to you so much, Brandon? You said it. Immediately.
Yeah, it was pretty random, but yet planned.
I'm not really sure why. It just was like a genre that the three of us would probably never pick right off the bat.
Fair.
That was the only reason.
The exception to the rule.
Yeah.
So obviously we all made our picks, and the first one up is a Michael's pick. We are doing The Princess Bride.
Inconceivable.
Why this one? This one was also on my list, but I figured it would get taken.
I thought about it, and so I watched it like a bunch of times, but starting when I was younger, seeing it when I was like adolescent, and then watch it a couple times I was older. It gets different and more different every single time, and I catch different things every time. And this time I watched it, almost didn't like it. I'm like, this is like just like. It's almost, it verges on like satire, but then funny. It's fucking funny, man. But,
I was telling my wife, I was like, I probably don't need to take notes, but I'm going to just so we can stay at least on track a little bit. But I don't think I need to write down notes.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie so many times.
Breaking out. The bully's breaking out.
Hit the music.
Hit a button.
Destroy this movie.
You don't like it?
Absolutely not.
Wow.
Holy shit.
But I will admit, this is only the
stand on business.
This is the second time I've seen this movie. Okay, so it's not one that I've watched a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it got like 15 minutes in, I was like, I remember exactly why I hate this movie.
You know what's funny is I love listening and you're like, well, I'm not gonna shit on it because it's someone's pick, and then you proceed to shit on it. So I'm prepared for that.
It definitely took me by surprise. You are probably the only person I know that doesn't like this movie.
I know.
Not necessarily excited to hear why you don't like it, but I definitely want to hear. You said 15 minutes in, you remembered why.
It's cheesy AF. Like, I just can't do it. Like, even the jokes, like, even back when I first watched it when I was younger, I'm like, this isn't even funny. Like, I didn't.
It's like weirdly dry.
It was just a like try hard comedy, like, to me. I cannot get over it.
There are times, I will say, the cheesiness is, you are 100% on, but. What fixes it for me in my brain is that it's literally a story being read to a young child.
Yeah, and there.
So all the silliness that happens, it makes sense to me because this is literally a fairy tale storybook that's being read to a child.
That's the part I forgot about.
And that just, for whatever reason, fixes any of the. Well, why would they talk like that? And I was like, oh, it's because it's literally
a
children's book.
Grandpa telling him a story.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that. I do get that.
The grandpa's my favorite character in the movie.
Fred Savage is mine, probably.
Because you're just an ornery little kid.
Yeah, the only thing that bugs me is he, like, flips. He, like, turns on the end, and he's just like, I appreciate the story.
You don't want to read the kissing.
Maybe I would.
But I'm interested in hearing why Michael's thoughts have changed now. So.
Like right now?
Yeah.
You did say that you started watching it this time and you were worried that maybe you didn't like it. You did say that just now. Wait. Well, not just now, but...
Yeah.
Before Brandon the Bully kicked the doors in like Goldberg.
Well, I watched it...
jackknife pieces buttercup.
I watched it twice because I watched it last week, whatever week we were going to record. And then I was like, huh, all right. That was... Yeah, I think to Brandon's point, it is a little bit cheesy and it's not as like... When I watched it when I was younger, it seemed more like... Obviously, as when you're younger, things are a little bit more thematic and like kind of exaggerated because, you know, through a young kid's mind, I was like, wow, this movie's funny. You know, the guy saying inconceivable a bunch, marriage, you know, that whole thing. And now I watch it, I'm like, I get it still, but I'm just not as like, I don't know. Maybe because I've seen it so many times. I really don't know. I'm stammering, but like, I don't know is my final answer.
This is one of my wife's favorite movies of all time. No, I'm just that not with.
You know, it's a lot of people's favorite movies. It really is. No. I don't get it, but I sure.
Hey, I get it. I hate the Goonies. It doesn't matter. I understand. There's
there's just
things for people, and there's things that aren't for people.
Exactly, and I
like Snow White. You know,
I just honestly like. I just try never to talk about it. Like, I never bring up the movie because...
Does it come up a lot?
If you're at a social setting and someone's like, hey, Princess Bride, you're like...
Do you know how many people quote Princess Bride? And I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. And they're like, you've never seen Princess Bride? And I was like, oh, yeah, I have. And it's dumb. So...
Have fun storming the castle.
No.
Not even Billy Crystal does it for you?
No.
He's so funny in this.
No.
I laughed the entire 10-minute sequence at Miracle Max's place. Weirdly, I quote his wife a lot when she goes liar. Whenever I'm calling somebody a liar, like saying it, like whenever you know, like usually to my wife, I go liar.
A lot of people quote this movie. It's not for me.
Cray, cray. That's insane. Maybe it's not insane, but it's wild.
It is wild.
Maybe it isn't wild, but, well, I guess we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. All right, let's cut print.
We're starting rom-coms off.
With a bang.
Wild. It's a 1987 film about a bedridden boy's grandfather reads him the story of a farm boy turned pirate who encounters numerous obstacles, enemies, and allies in his quest to be reunited with his true love. The top three films, 1987. Number three, Beverly Hills Cop 2. Number two, Fatal Attraction. And number one, Three Men and a Baby. Highest grossing film in 1987. Three Men and a Baby.
Three Men and a Baby.
You ever seen it?
Oh, it's in all caps. No.
Is that Tom Selleck?
Yeah.
Freaking Ted Hansen.
It was
Ted Danson, and then the guy from what are those movies? Is that Dave Gutenberg?
Yeah,
is
he Steve Gutenberg. Third man?
Yeah, Steve Gutenberg.
He's at a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. Solid D.
It's funny. I wonder if it holds up.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I was just blown away that the highest grossing film of 1987 was Three Men and a Baby.
Must have been a boring year.
Quiet.
Yeah. Isn't the sequel called Three Men and a Little Lady too?
Something like that.
Like, is the baby's a little grown up?
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, a ticket cost 1987 $3.91, which is equivalent to $10.80 our money. The budget for the film was $16 million, which is equivalent to $44.1 million. The box office was only $30.9 million. Which is equivalent to 85.3. So it just shy of doubling its budget. The film was also nominated for one Academy Award, but it won zero. And the one Oscar it was nominated for... do you think you could guess what it was nominated for, Brandon?
Film?
No.
Adapted.
Original song. Oh, man. Original song, Storybook Love by Willie DeVille. A song that when I read that, I went...
What?
When does that song? It literally, I
honestly, I was trying to figure out when there was a song. I was like,
Yeah, it's literally during the end credits. It's the only song that plays during the credits.
Cool.
I was like, I've seen this movie a million times. Didn't realize that there was a song attached to it.
It's like, did Andre the Giant sing a song and I didn't notice?
Anybody want a peanut? Like we said, this movie is about young Fred Savage, who's homesick. This is a Christmas movie, by the way. He has a papier-mâché Santa Claus hanging up in his room next to his refrigerator Perry poster.
Could have been July.
No, it's Christmas. He has a Christmas tree.
He just loves Santa.
Maybe he does.
It's my favorite.
He's homesick, and his grandpa, played by the incomparable Peter Falk, Mr. Columbo himself, those big caterpillar eyebrows come walking in. Hey, how you doing? Brings him a present any young boy would love to have, a book. Not just any book, an old book. He said it's the book his father read to him when he was sick, and now he's going to read it to him. Back in my day, TVs were books.
I love that part.
Their dynamic is so funny.
Yeah, they were good.
I love how he keeps interrupting, and then Peter Falk is pretty much just telling him to shut the fuck up the whole time. Are you going to let me read this? Yes, you're very smart. Now shut up. It sounds like a kissing book. I don't want a kissing book. Hey, there's other stuff in here too. You got pirates, princes, sword fights. All right, it could be cool. I like how he's like, all right, yeah, you could read it a little bit. And he goes, oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
The Princess Bride. So we enter this fantastical world, very much like a fantasy. We meet Buttercup, who's living on a farm with it seems like it's just the two of them, her and a farm boy named Wesley, who she orders around, pick up doing menial tasks because she loves him, and that's the only way that they can talk to each other, I guess. But he answers every request that she gives with, as you wish.
A young Robin Wright, too.
Yes, and Cary Elwes, yep. Who plays Wesley. From Saw fame.
Mm-hmm.
He's in other things. I like to tell people I know him from Saw. Not Robin Hood, Men in Tights, not The Princess Bride.
Saw.
And Saw 7, 3D, The Final Chapter.
Big Lord.
It's a deep dive. It's a deep cut. It's my favorite, you know.
Saw 7, Final Chapter?
Do we need to start a new side quest of all the
where
Saws?
It's just Saws and then other movies that have ridiculous amounts of
gore.
Hey, and you know, Saw 7 has one of the greatest tropes in all of horror movies. They say it's the final chapter and then they make three more movies.
Yeah, real man.
Look for number 11 out next year. Maybe this year. We are in 2025 now. They finally profess their love to each other. Farm boy Wesley realizes that he has no money to make means, so he sets sail across the great sea, is what they say, to go make his nut, bring home some money. They can start a family, but while on that voyage, his ship was attacked by the dreaded pirate Roberts, who famously leaves no survivors, and he is killed. Buttercup mourns the loss, and then we cut to 5 years later. She is now engaged, betrothed, to Prince Humperdinck.
Loser.
I laugh every time they say Humperdinck.
What a
too.
Loser.
even though she is betrothed to him, she does not love him. And the only way she finds enjoyment now is to go off riding for hours at a time into the woods on her horse. Until one fateful day, she runs into three men of varying degrees of sizes and looks. We have Wallace Shawn, we have Mandy Patinkin, and WWF Hall of Famer Andre the Giant. They tell them that there are three lost circus performers looking for the nearest village, and she informs them that there's no village anywhere near, and so he slyly says, then there will be no one to hear you scream. Wallace Shawn informs the others that they are going to kidnap her, kill her, and then frame the rival country, was it Gilder, I believe the country's name is, to start a war. Mandy Patinkin and Andre the Giant are exactly thrilled.
He didn't say anything about killing anybody.
They set sail off into the night, headed for the cliffs of insanity. And Patinkin is constantly believe that they're being followed. To which, you know, which by the way, inconceivable, not on the top 100 greatest quotes of all time. I'm sure there's a list of most quoted movies of all time.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll be on there. But I was actually surprised that neither Inconceivable nor My Name is Inigo Montoya wasn't on there.
It's probably because Manny Patinkin was like, I don't think that means what you think it means.
He does say it way too much.
Yeah.
That would be inconceivable for anybody to be following us. And he goes, oh, maybe it's just some fisherman out for a midnight sail in eel-infested waters. Anyway, we got to get going. Oh, Buttercup jumped into the water. This is one of my favorite parts just because of it's. She jumps in the water. He lets her know, hey, you hear that shrieking? Those are the shrieking eels. If you get back in the boat, we won't hurt you, but the eels are probably going to eat you, so you probably need to get in here anyway. We get that shot of the eel charging her, and then it cuts, and then Grandpa Columbo's like, Buttercup doesn't die, just so you know. Like, she doesn't get hurt. And he's like, what? And he's like, I'm only saying because you look very... you seem nervous.
Yeah, look at him. He's like... like clutching his blanket, just like
yeah. He lets go of the blanket. He's like, I'm not nervous. I'm nervous. I'm just concerned, yeah. Maybe. Oh, my baggy pot. And he goes back. You hear that, princess? That's the you already read that part. Oh, my mistake.
Those parts are funny. I like that little funny, like little, like pick up the story based on the book kind of thing.
He does the four fingers hitting his forehead like, oh, I'm a clumsy fool. It's, oh, my mistake. Where was I? That's the shrieking eels. Ah, and then right as the eel, you know, and then we get back in the story, and then Andre the Giant knocks the eel out, pulls her back in the water, pulls her out of the water back into the boat. We look behind us. That boat is now getting closer because we had to veer off to save her, get her out of there. Don't worry. We're at the Cliffs of Insanity. It's massive cliffs. I love how Manny Patinkin's like, he's gaining on us. Is he using the same wind that we are using? I keep looking to see if Brandon's going to crack a smile, laugh, anything. And he looks like he's looking at a different monitor right now. He's just not.
He's disengaged.
Yeah, well, my camera today is not in a very good position to be following along. Yeah,
I get you.
Yeah, I still love you. I can see right up your short. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it is weird that you have it on the ground. They pile onto Andre's back, and they start climbing the rope. He starts climbing the rope, I should say, to which we see that the stranger, dressed in black, very Zorro-esque, starts climbing the rope. Manny Patinkin lets us know he's climbing a rope, and he's gaining on us. Which Wallace Shawn's yelling at Andre. He's like, I'm carrying three people, and he only carries himself. He's like, you're worthless. You're an idiot. Don't say that.
I think he really could have carried three people up a rope like that.
He did.
Is it fact?
I saw it with my own eyes.
That's not actually CGI. It's like real.
That's what really I'm wondering. Like,
yeah.
He could.
I mean, he wasn't in the best of health at this point. He only had like six. I think he lived like 5 or 6 more years.
Yeah.
It's 87. I think he died in 93.
I'd have been.
They get to the top of the cliff to which they cut the rope, but the strangers clutch the rocks on the side of the cliff. Inconceivable, again. You keep saying that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. What do you think he thinks it means?
I think he thinks it's like a no way kind of thing.
Impossible.
Yeah, impossible.
He tells Manny Patinkin, okay, you stay behind. We're going to take off. You catch up later. If he falls off the cliff, perfect. But if he makes it to the top, kill him with the sword. To which he says, I'm going to kill him with my left hand. And he goes, we're in a hurry. And he goes, it's the only way I can be satisfied. Have it your way.
What a character.
My wife told me today that her favorite character is Manny Patinkin. Because he one has the best lines is what she told me, and that the way he interacts with everybody, he always has like these funny one-on-ones with everybody, especially this scene where he's looking over the cliff and he's like, you do not think you could speed things up?
And he has a story of revenge, so
you know,
everybody loves
getting he is the best character storyline.
Yeah.
Mandy Patinkin said that he channeled all that because about 5 years earlier, his father died of cancer. And so he was dealing with that death while avenging his fictional father's death. And he said that when he killed the six-fingered man, it felt like he slayed cancer. And it was like a great moment for him personally.
He slayed his, slayed his grief.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, he asked him, you think you could hurry this up? And he goes, well, this isn't as easy as it looks, so you're just going to have to be, you're going to have to wait. He's like, I hate waiting. What if I give you rope? I'll help you up here. I promise I won't kill you until you get up here. I swear on the life of my on my father's death that you will see the top of the cliff alive. Sounds good. Throw me the rope.
I like how there's a pause, there. Though. He's like, throw me the rope.
He gets up there. He even gives him a moment. Hey, catch your breath. Catch your breath. Oh, thank you. To which he asks him, do you have... I do not mean to pry. Do you have six fingers on your right hand? Do you begin every conversation this way? To which he lets us know that his father was killed by a six-fingered man. So he just kind of like sheepishly holds up five fingers. No, we good. Goes into his backstory a bit, that a six-fingered man ordered a sword from his father, who was the greatest sword maker of all time. Made the sword, but then he, you know, reneged on the deal, didn't want to pay. So he killed his father and left Inigo Montoya with two scars on his face to remind him. To which he trained his entire life, 20 years of mastering sword, so he may one day tell the six-fingered man, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Great sword fight, by the way. Both those guys trained for months. That's them really fighting. Those aren't stunt doubles or anything, with the exception of the flippy doos they do on the gymnastics beam that's hanging out there.
Yeah.
It turned into Gymkata for a second. I do love how they're, you know, talking back and forth. Oh, you see I'm using this style. Yes, I see that. And I'm assuming you're going to want to use this style to try to defend it. I would, but then I would think that by doing this, it would actually cancel that out. You know, they're jibber-jabbering. I know something that you don't know. I am not actually left-handed. And switches to right hands, and then the stranger does the same thing. I'm actually not left-handed either. So the sword fighting gets a bit more intense. Mandy Patinkin goes, who are you? He's just so impressed by him. He goes, no one of consequence. I must know. Get used to disappointment. Okay. Okay. Finally, the stranger disarms Mandy Patinkin, knocks him out. He doesn't want to kill him. I respect you, so I'm just going to knock you out. I got more important things to do. I love how it like zooms back out at him like running over the hill. To which Wallace Shawn's like, he's alive, inconceivable. Hits us with it again. Tells Andre the Giant, stay behind. I like how I just keep calling him Andre the Giant.
Yeah, what's his name?
Stay behind. Fezzik.
Yes.
Stay behind and kill him your way.
Where's my way?
You pick up a rock, you see his head, you hit him with the rock. No, my way's not very sporting. He rolls up, fires a warning shot off his starboard bow. The rock explodes. Lets him know, hey, we're men. I'm a WWF Hall of Famer. We're going to wrestle. I could kill you now with this rock, or we can wrestle. They do that, and this is over pretty quickly. He just jumps on his back and essentially just chokes him out. I like when he gets him on the ground, you know, he's listening to his heart, lets us know he's still alive, you know. You're not going to like the headache that you have when you wake up, but sleep well and dream of large women. Pats him on the chest. We see that Prince Humperdinck is now tracking them. They're up on top of the Cliffs of Insanity. They're all on horses. I'm curious to see how they got up there. Obviously, they didn't climb the cliffs, so where did they end up? Did they find a port and then end up on that cliff? I'm rambling. It doesn't matter. it's not something that matters.
It's just something I think about.
A great,
I think there was probably a horse trail.
But what I'm saying is that how did that get? It doesn't matter. you're getting me off topic. A great duel was fought here. You know, he's stepping on all the footprints. And then Christopher Guest. Do you like Christopher Guest, Brandon?
Who?
Christopher Guest, the six-fingered man. He is one of the...
Oh.
He does all the mockumentaries, Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah. I like him, but not in this movie.
I can't remember the band.
Five Finger Death Punch.
No.
I'm just joking.
No, it's the fake band.
Obviously, it's wrong.
Oh, this is going to bug me.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
I like how he's like super invested in what happened. Who won? he lets us know the loser went this way, the winner went this way towards Kilda. We keep cutting back. We're now with Wallace Shawn with the famous Iocane powder sequence. Oh, Brandon leaned into his microphone. I thought he was going to say something.
Very softly.
The battle of wits has begun. I'm going to pour this Iocane powder in one glass. Wallace Shawn, since you're the smartest man on earth, you ever heard of Plato? Socrates? Morons. You tell me which glass the Iocane powder's in, and then we drink, and we find out who is right and who is dead. We get that great scene of him obviously rambling because he doesn't know which one is in. What is that over there? He distracts him. Wait, what? Where? The stranger turns Sweet. Around and he swaps the glasses. Turns back around while Sean's laughing. What's so funny? Nothing. I'll tell you in a minute. But first, let's drink. You from your glass, me from mine. He makes the funny face while he drinks the wine, to which the stranger lets us know, you chose wrong. And he goes, you only think I chose wrong. Classic Rex from T-Rex, from Toy Story voice.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it is. I was trying to think, and I didn't look it up. I was like, he's in a fucking Pixar movie. Like, he, and then I couldn't put it together. But anyways.
Yeah, it's the yelling, because that's all Rex does in Toy Story.
Yeah.
You fell for one of the great blunders. Never get involved in a land war in Asia, and never go against a Sicilian when death is on the line. He laughs and then pauses.
Dead.
Fault conks over dead. Takes the blindfold off Buttercup, and she's like, oh, all this time, the poison was in your glass. And he goes, oh, no, actually, I spent a summer just getting a...
I was bored.
Yeah.
Building up a tolerance to poison.
Yeah, I started building a tolerance to Iocane powder. Just one day, I was like, maybe a little dabble, do ya?
Yeah.
Stranger takes Buttercup to the top of a hill, to which he starts nagging her about how she says that she was in love. But she's now betrothed to Humperdinck. She says that she once loved a young farm boy, but she was killed. I'm assuming you're the Dread Pirate Roberts. And he goes, of course, yes, that's me. You killed my love. He was a simple farm boy. He goes, oh, yeah, I remember him. He died well, if that makes you feel any better. We see Humperdinck coming up over the hill, and she says, and you can die too. Shoves him down the hill. To which he says, as you wish, guys, the stranger was Wesley.
Oh, my goodness. Whoa. That's the part that I was thinking about this last night, too. And it's just so funny that, like, just because he has a mask over his eyes, they are now strangers. But as he reveals a deep connective phrase, then it's like, oh, what? That? Oh, what? Oh, my goodness.
Well, I like when he's wrestling Andre and he's like, why do you have a mask? Were you burned with acid or something? No, I just think that at the peak of fashion, everyone in the future will be wearing these one day. So we burned with acid? But then when she's also talking about Wesley the farm boy, she says, you know, I loved him, simple farm boy, poor, but he had these beautiful eyes. And then it shows him with his deep blue eyes. And then I said to my wife, she watched it both times with me this past week, I said, almost like those eyes.
Wow.
She realizes that it was Wesley, to which then this movie slips into like parody, where she literally throws herself down the hill. And that's when I turned to my wife and I said, you know, I understand that this is like a comedy, like a romantic comedy. Yeah, there's funny parts, there's lines, that kind of stuff. But this her throwing herself down the hill feels so incredibly out of place in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I just watched Hot Rod. There's like a 5-minute scene of him falling. You know what? Like, that's.
Love Hot Rod. That is a funny movie.
But it's not a rom-com, Brandon. I know. We're not doing it.
We didn't pick comedies, but that would be at the top of my comedy list because it's beautifully written.
Stroking out.
I broke out.
He's like, chef's kiss.
Bro. Hit the, are we hitting the music? Do we hit the music?
Broke out of the Matrix.
When she gets to the bottom of the hill and they share a kiss, to which Fred Savage goes, ah, they're kissing. He has a conniption. He's like, Grump's like, do you want me to continue with this? No, it's okay. Keep going. Okay, thank you. You're too kind. We see them run into the fire swamp. Another great set piece. Feels like it's straight out of Labyrinth. Very Henson-esque, Fraggle Rocky fire swamp.
Fraggle Rock, yeah.
Wesley tells her that the dreaded Pirate Roberts spared him. I said, everything I told you actually happened, but what he did is he spared me. He found me. You know, he took pity on me, told me every day for 3 years, have a good night, Wesley. Good work. I'm most likely going to kill you in the morning. That happened for 3 years. To which he finally one day told me that he is not the actual Dread Pirate Roberts. He inherited it from another man who also inherited it from another man. the real Dread Pirate Roberts has been retired for 15 years living like a king. We got a new crew. He became my first mate and I took over the role as Dread Pirate Roberts. Also, why did you get engaged to Humperdinck? And she's like, you were dead, motherfucker. And I was telling my wife, I was like, yeah, do we not have mail?
Yeah.
She's supposed to write a letter. Why didn't he ever say, hey, I'm still alive? Not once.
Phone rings both ways there, buddy.
Fire swamp. We get bursts of flame. True to its name, it's a swamp and there's fire. Flame bursts out of the ground. We get crazy-ass quicksand. The quickest quicksand I've ever seen in my life. To which he has to rescue her. And then we also have the dreaded R-O-U-S's. The rodents of unusual size. To which he says, I don't think they exist. And is immediately attacked by one. he fights it off by lighting it on fire and then stabbing it. They exit the fire swamp. They're apparently the first people to ever make it. They've always said no one ever escapes the fire swamp. They were able to make it. Humperdinck surrounds them. To which, again, I don't know why she doesn't say he rescued me from the three guys who kidnapped me. But I also understand that Humperdinck is technically the villain of the movie, so it doesn't really matter. It just seems weird that she's like, yeah, just let him go. Promise not to hurt him, and I'll go back home with you. I swear it will be done.
That was pretty good.
That was good.
To which, thank you. Channeled my inner Humperdinck.
You know, going back a little bit though, speaking of Humperdinck, like when he's like, you know, trying to decipher, oh, what happened here? When
he could track a falcon on a cloudy day,
seriously. But when he when they figure out there was a duel here, he did this, blah blah blah, and he gets on his horse and he's riding away. The one part that's caught my eye the past two times is like he's like really enthusiastically, like, you know, encouraging the horse or whatever, and they're going so slow. And right when it goes around the corner and the scene shuts, he's like, his freaking like costume's all flailing. It's just the dumbest scene stuck in my head.
Humperdinck takes Buttercup, to which Christopher Guest says, yeah, let's get you back to your ship, wink wink. And you know, he lets him know, hey, we're both men, I know you're lying to me. And he goes, yeah. You have six fingers on your right hand, somebody was looking for you. To which he immediately knocks him out, conks him on the head, which I had read when they were filming. Cary Elwes told Christopher Guest, go ahead and hit me for real. Just go ahead and conk me out. So Christopher Guest obliged, hit him on the head so hard he knocked him unconscious truly, and split his head open.
Whoa.
Would you say he stop. Gave him a spinal tap?
Oh, that's the band. Turn it up to 11, Brandon.
That's funny.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. No, thank you. For reals, thank you. Because now I can sleep tonight.
You're going to have a headache until he's like, I wish someone would have said
that. The whole time I've been talking, I've been saying, in my brain, I was like, Christopher Guest. It was the older brother from Better Call Saul was also in it. It was directed by the same guy, Rob Reiner, who's also in the movie. Fake documentary. What, the drummers keep dying. What is the name of this?
There we are.
I haven't seen Spinal Tap in a long time.
This is Spinal Tap, baby.
Wait. Oh, this was Princess Bride. Did I watch the wrong movie?
We are talking about the wrong movie.
Oh, fuck.
He knocks him out. He takes him to the pit of despair to torture him on the machine. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but when we all worked together on Night Crew, we had a fun name for the beer cooler that we all had to work in. We all called it the Pit of Despair. So we were quoting this movie all the time at work, and Brandon probably didn't even know he was quoting Princess Bride.
Nope.
Got it.
Another guy named Mikey, I used to say to him all the time, the Pit of Despair. Don't even think about trying to get out of working in there. which is another great bit of the Pit of Despair. Don't even think about trying to escape. He just clears his throat. Now he talks eloquently.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to heal me if you're going to be torturing me? He goes, oh, yeah, well, we want you to be at 100% when we break you. Oh, so you will be torturing me? He's like, yeah. He's like, I can handle torture. He does like that slack jawed. Nodding his head.
With the, like, crusty, like, freaking cold sore looking thing.
Sticking on the... You survive the fire swamp, so you're very brave. But nobody makes it through the machine. Ominous. Ooh.
The machine.
We hear Columbo's narration saying, that night the king died. And Buttercup was wed to Humperdinck that night. And then we get the introducing Queen Butt, and then it interrupts us again. What do you mean, Grandpa? No, she marries Wesley. She doesn't marry Humperdinck. And he goes, are you going to keep interrupting me? Just like, and then he goes, Jesus, Grandpa, why are you even reading me? And like he's getting all worked up. He's like, okay, clearly you're very worked up. The story has been doing a lot to you. You're sick. I'm just gonna, no, Grant, stay. Like, he puts his hand on his leg. No, stay. Keep reading. Okay. Do you mind? Okay. that's when we get that classic, it was all a dream. You know, she wakes up. The king was still alive.
Nice.
She's not, she wasn't married, but the wedding night is tonight. And then you hear Fred Savage chime in, see? Told you. And then Columbo, yes, you're very smart. Shut up. Buttercup tells Humperdinck that she loves Wesley and that she will kill herself if she can't be with him. To which he says, okay. But first of all, let's stop talking about killing ourselves. You love him. That's fair. You write four identical letters. I'll put them in my four fastest ships heading north, south, east, and west. We'll run up the... the Dread Pirate Roberts is always around Florence this time of year. We'll hold up the white flag. And if he wants you, he can come back and take you. But if not, hey, if he doesn't show up, maybe I'm an alternative to suicide, is the line he uses. To which she agrees. And she, you know, writes those four identical letters. This last time, not that this is important... Do you think that Christopher Guest and Humperdinck are an item together? I kind of was picking up a little bit on that this time, but I don't know if that's true.
Or like a one has a feeling. Nah, it is a little bit more like outward from the both of them. I thought maybe like one had like a, like, ooh, I really wish that, you know, I have a crush on this guy kind of thing. That's funny you point that out.
So like when they're going to the Pit of Despair and he's like, I'm trying to find that knot. And he goes, do you want to come down? I'm putting what, you know, Wesley's all healed up. I'm going to put him on the machine. He's like, Tyrone, you know how much I love watching you work. he's like, I've got a wife to kill, a country to frame, a war to start. I'm swamped. And then he comes over and it's like he puts his hands on his hands and he goes, well, if you don't have your health, then you don't have anything. You know, so like this time I was just like, I wonder if there's a thing going on there. But, and it's not important. I just... Of the million times I've watched it.
Yeah, I would lean that way.
I didn't even notice it really, but like
it doesn't matter. But like this last time I watched it, I was like, you know, I could see a universe where they're an item, but it's literally never brought up again. They don't have a moment like that again.
Fair.
I love Guest going down there. He's very professional as he's torturing him. Just so you know, I'm actually trying to write a book about this, so I need you to be just very honest. We have multiple levels. I'm going to start you, since this is our first time, I'll start you at the lowest. We'll try to get you up anywhere from 1 to 5, but we'll see how it goes. So let's begin. You know, he lifts up that notch. The water wheel starts going. He's got the suction cups all over him. He starts grinding in pain, yelling, screaming. He stops it. So essentially what happened is, you know, suction cups, those are around. They suction many things, but I'm actually sucking life. I just sucked 1 year of your life away. Now again, this is for posterity, so please be honest. How do you feel? I just love how...
How would you rank your pain on a scale of 1 to 10?
Exactly. That's what I thought it was, too.
To which he starts crying, you know, and he goes, interesting, and then like writes it in his notebook.
Where on this chart, starting from happy going to sad?
The sad face, yeah. 8 or higher, bro. Yeah.
How would you rank your experience? Leave us a review, you know?
I love the next scene. It's like, Humperdinck is in his study, and he calls in his... Every time I see this movie, I think that gatekeeper guard has a Scottish accent. I don't know why, but he's just got the red hair, and he's got the chops that go into the... So when he comes up, I expect him to talk a little bit like this, but he doesn't, you know? He just has a very normal voice. He lets him know, I've been hearing rumblings about my bride is going to be murdered, and I'm going to need you to have my spies have heard no such thing. He's like, still, I want 30 men guarding the gate. My wife will not be murdered. The gate only has one key, and I hold the key. Also, I want you to clear out the thieves' forest, because if anything bad happens, it's probably going to come from them. To which we cut to the thieves' forest, getting absolutely ransacked, to where we meet a very drunk Mandy Patinkin waiting for Andre the Giant to show back up. You told me to wait here? Here I am. Andre the Giant is on the Brute Squad. You're on the Brute Squad. You are the Brute Squad. sobers him up by dunking his head in some ice-cold barrels. Fezzik got an ego back to health. Just dunking his head in barrels. He lets him know, hey, the Count... he's the six-fingered man. He's the man who killed your father. All right, cool. We need to attack the castle so I can kill him. But the castle is guarded by 30 men. He goes, well, how many men can you take? Probably only 10. And he goes, well, that leaves... Starts counting on his fingers.
Yeah.
That leaves 20 for me. Even on my best day, I could not do 20. We need another man. The greatest swordsman I've ever fought. The Man in Black. But we don't know where he is. So we have to seek it, and so now their mission is we have to find the Man in Black. Buttercup realizes that Humperdinck has never sent the letters, and insults him, says that she'd rather die than be with him, and he goes, so be it, locks her in her room. He runs down to the pit of despair and knocks that motherfucking machine all the way up to 50. Not 50!
Yeah.
to which we get a very Frankenstein's monster, you know, I always think there's going to be, like, electricity zaps, too, but there really isn't.
No, but it felt like there was going to be.
Should have been. Yeah, like, it's alive! Yeah. Him squirming, yelling, the water wheels going like crazy. He yells so loud the entire kingdom can hear his scream, to which Mandy Patinkin says, I know that pain. I made that noise the day my father died. That is the Man in Black, for his wife is now... His lady love is being betrothed to Prince Humperdinck. So we need to follow the direction of that scream, to which they immediately go to the forest and immediately find the albino looking for the Pit of Despair. Jog his memory, would you, Andre? conks him on the head too hard. Manny Patinkin summons the spirit of his father to help guide his sword, to which he finds the knot. They come out there. He's dead. No, we need a miracle. A lifeless Wesley is on the table. We need a miracle because he's dead. We're taking him to Miracle Max. The guy that Brandon doesn't like, Billy Crystal.
Nope.
Hurts my feelings.
Nope. Confirmed.
Are you the man they call Miracle Max who worked for the king? Yeah, and the king's lousy son fired me. That thank you for reminding me about that. Next, you want to give me a paper cut and squeeze lemon juice in it while you're at it? We're closed.
That's funny, dude.
I had read that Billy Crystal would just go off. They let him do what Billy Crystal does. And that the director, Rob Reiner, would have to leave set because he would laugh too hard and it would ruin takes. Like, you could hear him laughing. And that Manny Patinkin said that of all the stunts and sword fighting he did, he never got hurt. The only injury he sustained was he truly bruised ribs from laughing so hard with Billy Crystal, which is something I didn't know you could do.
Bruise your ribs?
No.
Just by laughing, though. They're like straining a muscle so much that, geez, that's crazy.
Do you have any money? 65. Ah, I never work for so little. Unless it's, I did it once, and it was for a very noble cause.
Very noble cause.
This man has a noble, his wife, cripple, his children, starving. Aren't you a filthy liar? Okay, no, I need him to avenge my father's death. Your first story was better. I love he lifts his arm up and it drops. I've seen worse. they go and they get that. He's like, we'll just ask him what his noble cause is. And he goes, well, he's dead, sir. And he goes, ah, look, no so much. He goes and gets the, what do they call those? It's like a billower. That's what you know.
Oh, for like for a fire? Fire.
Yeah.
Probably a billower. Yeah.
Yeah. Injecting some air into him. And he goes, nah, what your friend here is only mostly dead. There's two differences between mostly dead and all the way dead. Mostly dead, you can come back from it. All the way dead, there's really only one thing you can do. Go through his pockets and try to find loose change. fills him up with air. Hello in there. What's so great that you need to come back from life? You know, he pushes on his stomach. True love! And he goes, ah. He didn't say true love. That would be very noble, but it isn't. He actually said to brave, which, as we all know, means to bluff. So well, you're probably playing cards. And that's when his wife comes in. Get away from me, you witch. I'm not a witch, I'm your wife. You'll never have it so good. Nothing?
It's Billy Crystal's shtick. I mean, that's Mike Wazowski or whatever from...
Miss, what the fuck?
Look at him pretending like he doesn't know what's that... Wazowski.
Or whatever.
It's...
You never had it so good. if you bring this man back to life, he will help Humperdinck. The man who fired you is getting married to the love of his life, and he will help. You mean I bring this guy back to life? He takes care of Humperdinck? Now talk about a noble cause. I'm in. Give me the money. They give him the little pill, and they coat it in chocolate. It helps it go down the throat better. But wait 15 minutes for max potency and no swimming for like an hour. Don't go swimming for an hour. Then you have fun storming the castle. you think they'll do all right? Not a chance. Bye. So funny.
That's good stuff.
They give Wesley the pill. How long is it going to let? He wakes up immediately. But he can't move. I love how Andre is just super jazzed that he's like, yeah, you move your finger. This doesn't excite you? You're not excited about that? Fill me in. What's going on? Okay. Castle's guarded by 60 men now. Humperdinck's marrying Buttercup tonight. We got to get in there. And he goes, well, if only I had a Holocaust robe. And Andre the Giant pulls up. Will this do? And where did you get that? I found it at Max's. It fit me so nice. He said I could have it. if only we had a wheelbarrow. Oh, we actually have one. We got one from the albino. So they dress up Andre as like a ghoul, saying he's the Dread Pirate Roberts, and they light him on fire to scare the guards away, to which we're intercutting with a ceremony, and not just any ceremony, a marriage ceremony.
Classic.
Marriage is what brings us together today.
I forgot, like, how, like, marshmallows in his mouth that guy is.
Wow. Whoa, wow.
It's like a...
A dream within a dream.
It's like The Godfather, but, like, worse. It's like it's like not in his jowls. It's like in the back of his throat, like
tongue. It's like he's holding his tongue down.
Exactly. I think the marshmallows in the mouth was perfect. I knew exactly what
you said. Chubby bunny.
Yeah.
Chubby bunny.
It's precisely.
All the men outside are running away, to which they take the cloak off and they confront the gate key guard. Where's the gate key? I have no gate key. Fezzik tears his arms off. Oh, you mean this gate key? classic. The three men wake their way through the castle as Humperdinck hurries up the wedding. Same man and wife. Man and wife. Cool, we're married now. Tells the king, take her to the honeymoon suite. I'll be there shortly. Which they walk away. She kisses him on the cheek. What was that for, dear? He goes, I just want to know. I want you to know that I'm going to miss you because I'm going to kill myself tonight. That's nice. She kissed me.
Yeah. That's nice.
That's nice. Manny Patinkin runs into Christopher Guest, hits us with that line. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. The music swells as the swords come out, and then Christopher Guest just takes off running down the hall, like the other way. Oh, okay. So they chase after him. Andre the Giant has to put down Wesley because he's literally just dead weight right now because his legs don't work to break the door down for him to go. We get that.
First he asked him to kick down the door. He's like, hey, kick down. Can you kick down this door for me?
I can't leave him here. Yeah. Ah, he's getting away! And I like how he just like hits it and then just does the go on
proceed
with the the welcome the proceed hand gesture. Thank you. He's shocked by Christopher Guest hurling a knife at him, sticks him right in the gut. To which he says, "Oh, you were that little Spanish brat that gave a lesson to." He summons the spirit of his father to take hold. And he finds that strength, and they get a sword fight, and he keeps hitting him with that same line over and over and over again.
He's like, what do you keep saying then?
Montoya. Stop saying that! Yeah. He disarms him. He gets the jump on him. Tell me I can have anything. You can have anything you want. Give me anything. Money, pleasure, nothing. It's all yours. Anything and more. Tell me I can have whatever I want. Anything, say it! And then he stabs him in the gut and says, I want my father back, you son of a bitch. Vengeance has been fulfilled. Cut to Buttercup in her room getting ready to stab herself in the chest, to which Wesley lets us know that he's been on the bed the whole time just watching. She jumps on him. Why aren't you hugging me and holding me? He's like, I can't move. Gently!
Conk.
Humperdinck comes in from behind, pulls out his sword, and he says, we're going to fight to the death, to which Wesley retorts, not to the death, to the pain. And by that I mean, I'm going to get up and I'm going to cut off your feet at your ankles and your hands at your wrists. And my tongue next, I'm assuming. Come on, get on with it. I'm not finished. Then it will be your left eye followed by your right. And then my ears, I get it. Nope, false. The ears you will keep and here's why. I'm going to let you live and I'm just going to have you roam the earth. And I want you to hear with your perfect ears every time somebody sees you and says, my God, what is that? Ding. He big dogs him so much, he summons the strength and stands up. He's like, you're bluffing. He goes, am I? And stands up and pulls a sword out and says, drop your sword. To which Humperdinck's like, oh my God, drops the sword. And then speaking of being silly, horse acting wise, I love how he like gingerly goes to sit on the chair. Like he pulls up his skirt, his drapery, and then goes down and sets it down and then just sets his hands on his lap. Like a child that's in trouble. to which they tie him up. And then Wesley falls back on the bed. He goes, I knew he was bluffing. I knew he was bluffing. They inform him that we're going to let you live because I hope you live a long, lonely life in your cowardice up here in your castle. Where's Andre? I thought he was with you. To which he's outside. Hello, I found four horses. And I figured if we find the lady, there will be four of us. And we could ride off together. Hello, lady. Which, they jump down. Manny Patinkin says, you know, I've spent so much of my life planning vengeance that now that's done, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with myself. To which Wesley's like, well, have you ever thought about being a pirate? Because you'd make a great Dread Pirate Roberts. Aha! Sequel! They jump off together. They ride off into the sunset. They lean in for that kiss on the horse, and then we cut back to reality. Columbo closes the book. Ah, what is it, Grandpa? Ah, kissing. Yeah, it's kissing stuff, you know. No, it's okay. You can finish it. Okay. Let's just know that it's one of the greatest kisses of all time. The end. And then I like how awkward it is just when he closes the book and Columbo just like pats his legs like, all right. Have a good night.
Time to go.
Grandpa, maybe tomorrow you can come back and read it again. As you wish. So, pretty much a perfect movie.
Yep.
So is it? It's just the cheese factory you don't like? Just, I understand just that a, you just said it's not fun.
Try hard, like I just it doesn't.
Do you like other Rob Reiner movies? Misery. This is Spinal Tap. Michael, do you know who Rob Reiner is?
I don't know names very well.
He is Zooey Deschanel's father on New Girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, so I do. And they, I forgot he's parody, in Spinal Tap.
They even yeah, this parody is Spinal, yeah. Misery on New Girl when he's at home.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Bedridden, yeah, yeah. Which is a movie he directed.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That's why it's even funnier. But.
Let's see. Stand By Me.
Yeah, classic. Growing, coming of age.
Misery. Harry Met Sally. A Few Good Men.
Oh, I love A Few Good Men.
Bucket List. Never seen it.
Why does When Harry Met Sally pop up?
Oh, yeah. When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally is a little earlier, which, did he direct or did he just help write with Nancy Myers? Am I getting that completely
director
wrong?
Director Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
Director Rob Reiner. Did he also help write it?
It says screenplay by Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner.
Nora Ephron, not Nancy Myers. I've never seen When Harry Met Sally, so.
Emma made me watch it. Emma and I watched it together.
He did.
Well,
he did.
Backstory was that she was like, you haven't seen it? And then she's like, I got
it. Yeah. Anyway. I had it on my list for this round, but it just felt disingenuous for me to choose it just because I haven't seen it. But what were you saying, Brandon?
He did Dickie Roberts.
Oh, child star.
Yeah, Dickie Roberts.
Say the full title. Dickie Roberts, semicolon, child star.
The former.
Former child star.
Child star, yeah.
I still say Nuck and Futz these to this day.
I've never seen Dickie Roberts.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's, yeah.
I saw that trailer a lot when it was coming out.
I don't know. It's just the movie, I think. And the fact that everybody loves it.
It is a movie, yeah.
I think it's just the movie.
So you don't like it because a lot of people like it? That's just hater attitude.
Bro. No. That's not what I'm saying. I don't appreciate the movie, you know, because I don't find it funny. I don't find the humor funny, but it is everybody's favorite movie.
You feel the same way about this movie as I feel about Monty Python. I just don't get it.
Yeah,
it's like the same level of cheese. I feel like.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
it's just like it's not even dry humor. It's just like.
It's British.
Here's my joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, get it out of here.
Yeah, not my favorite rom com.
Damn. That's a bummer, dude. Mm-hmm.
That overall is a bummer.
Trust me. Yeah, it's a real big letdown.
I don't think this movie's a letdown, but
I mean, to start the rom-com list for me, yeah, it's a big letdown.
Nice job, Michael.
Yeah, fucking Michael.
God, who invited this guy?
Well, I mean, we could talk about what we're doing next week, and we could see what Brandon's opinion on that is.
Yeah, let's move on.
And my opinion is not the only one here. So,
no, but it honestly, the episodes where Brandon the Bully comes out, it makes for it's one of my favorites, because then at least we have some
debate.
Not that, yeah, I guess
debate's always good. Healthy debate.
Knowing we're not going to change each other's minds.
And knowing that I'm never going to take this movie off the 100 funniest movies and 100 years of 100 passions and what other lists is this movie on?
Oh, I was like, those Bravo's, are your lists? Those are some extensive lists.
Well, I will say that the AFI has this movie ranked as the number 88 love story.
Yeah.
So we got some AFI callbacks here. But in regards to what we're doing next week, you know, the way we're doing this the same way we did the last 10. Obviously, we're just doing 6. We're doing chronologically. Last time we did that, it mixed it up pretty well. This time, it doesn't really mix it up that well at all, because we started with Michael, and now we're doing your second and final film for the rom-com section. We're moving up 1 year to 1988's Big.
Oh, nice.
I love this movie.
Oh, good. If I picked two movies that Brandon hates, I'd be like, oh,
me,
cool.
Me, however... No, I'm just kidding.
I hate this movie.
I do think it's weird that a woman wants to have sex with a 12-year-old boy.
Also,
but
that is a little weird.
I'm curious to
that
watch
is the
it
rom-com part.
2025 now.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll be back with some Tom Hanks guys. We're fulfilling our Forrest Gump. We had Robin Wright today. We'll have Tom Hanks tomorrow. Next time. We say we go ahead and cut print check the gate, fellas.
See you guys.
See ya.